Kia ora koutou, welcome back to another episode of Aotearoa Unearthed, Archaeology for Everyone. Have you ever wondered what happens to all the artefacts, the data, the research and reports after the excavations and the monitoring is done in New Zealand? Well, that's what we're looking at today with Dr. Catherine Watson. Catherine is going to share with us about her work on the Christchurch Archaeology Project. She's one of the founders of this project, and the aim of it is to preserve, share and research Ōtautahi Christchurch's archaeological heritage for everyone to use and explore. Hi Kat, thanks so much for coming in today. So can you start by telling us what is this Christchurch Archaeology Project?
Sure. So the Christchurch Archaeology Project is a charity that I set up with Hayden Court and Jesse Garland to preserve and share the archaeological data we recovered post-earthquake in Christchurch, but also to make it available for other people to research and to realise the research potential of it, because we think this is an incredible taonga, really, in terms of the city and what it says about the city's growth and development, and of course the people who were here before the city, the Māori population of this area. And the data is currently around, then we want to make it much more easily accessible to people and to share all of the great stories that it can tell.
So I know for you and me, we just know about the Canterbury earthquakes. They're a huge thing in our lives, but perhaps for people who are not so familiar with it, can you explain why there is a lot of archaeology post-earthquake?
Sure. So obviously the earthquakes hit 2010, 2011, and huge process of demolition, rebuild and repair after that. And essentially in New Zealand, any archaeological site formed prior to 1900 is protected by legislation, and you need to have an archaeological authority to destroy, damage or modify that site. And this includes standing buildings as well. And so lots of where that post-earthquake work took place, there was pre-1900 occupation, so archaeological work would take place on site. This is all data that's come about as a result of that process. For me, part of the point of the project is going one step beyond just recovering the data. It's about that sharing of it and the interpretation of it. And actually learning something from it, learning more about our history and our place in the world, which is why we do archaeology.
Absolutely. And if we're just to get a rough idea of how much data and artefacts there are, can you give a ballpark figure?
So we reckon we've got about 1 million artefacts, which sounds like a lot, but on a global scale it's pretty small, and it comes in at currently about 1,200 boxes, but both of those numbers are continuing to grow, and it's also arguably about 1,000 archaeological sites. And I think one of the really important things about the nature of the archaeological material within the data set is that it spans everything from Māori occupation of this area through until 1900, and it covers a huge range of site types. It's not quite a random sample, but it's as close as you're going to get.
And at the moment, where are these boxes and reports sitting?
So the reports are actually available on the Heritage New Zealand website through the digital library, which is fantastic. But then the artefacts are in various storage units, and as well as the artefacts, what sits alongside that and is equally important is essentially a documentary archive, some of which is hard copy, a lot of which is digital. So lots of photographs of archaeological sites, drawings of buildings and sites, maps and plans, historical data, and that is all stored again in different files in different places. And if you want to work with that data, as I've done with my PhD and as Jessie's doing with her PhD, you've almost got to start from scratch to pull it together into a form that you can work with it from all the disparate files. So with the Christchurch Archaeology Project, we're going to be bringing that data together so that people don't have to do all that work themselves, so that it's ready to go. And that's really important for researchers, but also for just the general public wanting to use the data.
And I'm wondering if you can tell me a little bit about the expertise of the people you've got involved. Do you have your own areas of interest?
Sure. So yeah, Jessie is an artifact specialist or material culture specialist, I think she would call herself. She worked for Underground Overground for a number of years before starting her PhD, and is really familiar with particularly the European artifacts that have come out of Christchurch. Hayden currently runs Underground Overground. He is really interested in buildings archaeology and also brings a lot of business expertise with him, and I ran Underground Overground archaeology for many years before Hayden did, and have recently completed my PhD looking at buildings archaeology, so the buildings of Christchurch are my particular interest, but all of it is fascinating, and I think we are all equally interested in the different components of it, including, although none of us specialise in Māori archaeology, it's still pretty interested in that too.
I wonder if people realise that buildings can be archaeology. Can you just explain a bit more about that and perhaps how you've used those records for your PhD?
I'm simplifying a little bit, but any building built prior to 1900, if it's going to be demolished, is considered an archaeological site under the Heritage New Zealand Pohere Taonga Act. And so that means you need an archaeological authority, and that authority is issued with conditions that involve recording. So you'll do elevation drawings, floor plans, lots and lots of photographs, sample different materials, basically record all of the details of the building and how it's changed over time to understand the use of that building. And for me, it's always about people, how people use that space. And so for my PhD, I looked at 101 houses that were demolished post-earthquake in Christchurch. And I was looking at, I guess, how Christchurch's domestic architecture developed over time, how it changed, and why people built the houses that they built. And then learning more about those people as well and their lives in 19th century Christchurch.
That's so interesting. Have you got any examples of how domestic architecture changed in terms of how people used it? I don't know, say the kitchen or the bathroom.
There's probably not a lot that changes in that 1850 to 1900 period. I mean, you get those early European houses were obviously fairly basic, and as time moves on, they get bigger and they get more spacious and decorative, and also a greater range of rooms. And what you do notice is that, of course, the bigger the house, the more rooms it has and the more different functions of rooms you get. So a big grand house might have a drawing room and a morning room and a dining room and a library and various bedrooms and then all the service rooms, but your basic bog standard house is just going to have a much narrower range of rooms, and that just reflects the different activities that are going on in those houses.
I know the Christchurch Archaeology Project is taking on a bit of steam because you've got some funding. So I was wondering if you could tell me about the process of applying for that funding and how you went about it.
Sure. So the funding we've been fortunate enough to receive is from Manatū Taonga, the Ministry for Culture and Heritage, through their Regeneration Fund, and it's going to enable us to build a database and a website to hold all this amazing information and making it publicly available, which is a really key part of our work and our ethos. So yeah, the process of applying for the funding was quite a learning curve. I've never applied for funding before. Delving into the depths of exactly what are we going to do and how are we going to do it, and nutting all of that out and working out how much it'll cost. And it helped refine the scope and the scale of the project and get a much better sense of where it is we want to go and what it is we want to make available to people.
Is there anything else like this in New Zealand?
No, nothing at all. This is a bigger issue that we face as archaeologists in Aotearoa, where there are no institutions that are collecting archaeological material on a large scale. Some marae have whare taonga. You know, museums might want the whole items from your collection. There's not much that's complete in an archaeological collection, but to me it's really critical that the collections from a particular site stays together without having bits picked out of it, but also that it stays with the data that sits alongside it. And this is an increasing issue in archaeology in New Zealand, and one I'm working on with the New Zealand Archaeological Association to develop a position paper to outline, you know, this is the problem, how do we fix it? I'm missing the step there. Do we need to fix it? I think it's a no-brainer. We absolutely have to fix it, otherwise we're at risk of losing all of this data. And you can't, the technical reports are good, but you can't revisit a site and reinterpret a site based solely on those. You need to go back to the original records and the original objects.
For our show and tell section, I don't have a specific artifact. Well, we know you've got a million, but I thought perhaps we could talk about international comparisons. I know that you had a Winston Churchill scholarship earlier this year to go and visit overseas institutions that do maybe a similar thing. Wondering if you can tell me where you visited and what you saw.
So I went to, I think it was 7 archaeological repositories, places where archaeological archives are stored in both England and the US. One of them I went to only stored digital data, whereas others had a combination of physical and digital. It was really interesting for me to go and talk to those places and learn about how they operated and the challenges they faced. And they're all quite different. I mean, one of the places I went to was the Museum of London Archaeological Archive, and the oldest items in their collection were recovered in 1926. So they're dealing with 100 years worth of archaeological material that's been collected. So you can imagine the scale of that and the challenges it presents in terms of how archaeological practices change over time and how archiving practices and standards change over time. So it was really great to talk through those issues and see that we're not alone in terms of the challenges that we're facing, and also be able to call on those people for their advice. Mm. And some of it was really practical stuff, like making sure that your boxes fit your shelves with no room to spare so you can maximise that storage space. But others was much bigger kind of conceptual ideas, how you approach some of the problems you encounter.
What about the American institutions? What were they like?
So I went to the New York City Archaeological Repository, to Colonial Williamsburg, and the MAC Lab, Maryland Archaeological Conservation Lab. The MAC Lab in Colonial Williamsburg in particular were amazing. It's just on a completely different scale. The MAC Lab was established as a conservation lab for archaeological material and to conserve shipwrecks, so to conserve quite big things. The hall that runs down the middle of the facility was designed to be wide enough for a forklift to move up and down it to carry objects. And they've got all kinds of conservation facilities there. But also they do lots of public outreach as well, which is what I was quite interested in. And in terms of bringing in researchers and having collections readily available for research, but also working with school groups and things like that and getting ideas for how you can do that. We're talking about what happens when you make collections available online and in terms of how that can increase the amount of interest in your collection. Pretty essential to making sure that people use it as having that online presence. So hence the need for the website.
And did they find that it increased public?
Yes, absolutely. And it was interesting hearing about some of the different tech tools that worked. New York City Archaeological Repository has a timeline of New York's history with archaeological artifacts slotted into it, and apparently that's really popular with schools and general public, whereas MAC Lab has a lot of identification tools online which are used by archaeologists all over the world. So you can get quite different audiences for what you're putting online, and it's deciding where to focus your efforts or realising what you're going to get out of doing what.
Cool. So for our digging deep section, I thought we'd talk more about this public archaeology outreach. Can you tell me a bit more about the type of outreach you're planning?
So we've got the basic things we do already, which are regular social media posts, a weekly blog, Christchurch Archaeology Project and Underground Overground, share that. Also lots of public talks, and then we've got two events as part of Christchurch Heritage Festival. So Jessie is going to be working with the Write On School for Young Writers, taking some artefacts in to help, cool, you know, to inspire them with their creative work. And I am organising a series of short talks from local archaeologists. And then we'll do another event for Archaeology Week next year. And then we'll also have a big launch for this as well. Part of what I'll be working on next year is developing an outreach programme too, because it's all very well and good to build this database, but then we want people to use it, and we particularly want schools and local community groups to work with it, and people who probably have no idea that this data exists or could be of use to them or of interest to them. So it's working out how we can really tap into that and share that knowledge and data.
Awesome. Well, you know I love archaeology outreach, so yes. I need to come along to those. This seems a bit of a basic question, but why is public outreach for archaeology important? Why does it need to be done?
Because when we excavate these sites, we write a report and it goes into the Heritage New Zealand Pohiri Tāonga Digital Library. That's a really great first step in terms of making that data available, but those reports are technical reports. They're not designed for the general member of the public. I'm an archaeologist. Some of them are quite hard to read, and some of them are not very interesting at all. But we do archaeology, and archaeology is protected because it's a public good. So I believe that we as archaeologists have a duty to share that public good that's been realised, which is the information that we've learnt about our past. And so you can't expect people to go and read these technical reports, but there's a whole range of ways that you can get out there and share that information. And in general, people love it. They're really fascinated by what we can learn about the past. And I think archaeology, for me, provides a somewhat different lens from, say, history, because we're always starting with the physical objects. There's a famous text called In Small Things Forgotten, and that's so much of what archaeology is about, particularly this European archaeology in Christchurch, where it's the things that people throw out, but from that you can tell these amazing stories. One of the things I love about archaeology is that power to connect us to a named individual and tell one person's story, their experiences of life, which I think are much more real than just talking about the big ideas or the big concepts, which are equally important but not necessarily as easy to relate to.
Yes. And just to finish off, we'll have a question from a kid. So where are we going to be able to see the real things you found? Where are these million artefacts going to be stored, and will you actually be able to touch them? Or
this is a very good question. The short answer is we really, really hope that we can make these available to the public so they can touch them. And our long-term aim is in fact to have a physical premises where people can come in, they'd be able to use the database, sure, there'd be an exhibition space, but also they could come in and work with the artefacts or touch them. people love the idea of just opening up the boxes of artifacts and looking at them, that kind of sense of discovery you get. And I don't believe we should be keeping this material if it's not being used in some way. And the database is great, but also there's a real power in holding an artifact that was thrown out 100 years ago and thinking about how that got to be where it was and the story that goes with it. So yes, get the database done. Then we're going to find somewhere for you to come and pick up the artifacts and look at them and do not quite what you want with them, but to explore them on your own terms.
Thank you so much, Kat, and good luck with the project. I know it's picking up steam at the moment, so I hope it all goes really well.
Thank you. Yes, it's going to be a fairly full-on few months, but we're so excited to have got to this point and to be pushing ahead with it.
Cool. Thank you. Aotearoa Unearthed podcast is a joint production of Heritage New Zealand, Pohiri Tonga and the New Zealand Archaeological Association. It's recorded and edited by me, Rosemary Baird. If you've enjoyed this episode, why don't you check out some of our back catalogue on iTunes and Spotify? And we'd love it if you could recommend this podcast to anyone you know who's interested in New Zealand archaeology or history. Ka kite.